Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Mind Shifter Radio with Dr. Michael Rice. Well, we still don't have all the technical difficulties worked out, apparently. Welcome to Mind Shifter Radio with Dr. Michael Rice, Forgiveness Doctor. This is our second week, and we think that our first week was absolutely awesome last week. And we have one caller already on the line. So, Michael, I'll let you start out, and then we'll welcome 417 to the line.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show. We're delighted to be here. And delighted to be a Mind Shifter support for every mind, heart, and being on the planet. If you want to give us a call, Jeannie, the call number is area code. I don't have it memorized yet. We just started the show.
646.
We're learning.
200. It's 646-200-4169.
All right. So if you want to call in, if you have a question, a comment, a thought, we'd love to hear from you. We want to support you in your healing process, and healing being the removal of everything that is unlike love from every mind, heart, and being on the planet. So you want to pull David's call in, and let's see, let's have David set the tone for where we're going to go in today's show.
417, you're on the air.
Good morning, how are you all?
Awesome.
Good morning, David. For everybody that hasn't met David yet, David is the center manager at Heartland, our teaching center in the Ozarks in southern Missouri. And I don't know exactly what you have on your mind at this moment, David, but I'd sure like to find out.
Well, you know, yesterday's training opened up some ideas and thoughts around what perception is and some more about the dissociated mind. I know that it's some new ways of introducing it, and I wonder if you might be able to make a few comments about it, about the perception. You know, what is the perception and this dissociated mind?
Okay, great question. That's really at the core of what's different about this work that we're developing under the title of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So it's right on track. And there's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, that is, there are actually 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity happening in the brain, that the maximum amount of information available in that same time frame is 9 bits. So there's a tiny fragment of data that the mind outputs out of what's firing within it. And it's also been estimated that in that same time frame, there are approximately 10,000 bits of data potentially available. And in the actual world, the estimate is that there are approximately 20 trillion bits of data going on. So we look at a 20 trillion bit world. If we were to try to be aware of 20 trillion bits of data all in the same moment, we'd have a great deal of difficulty. Our minds would be so confused, we would not have clarity about anything. And so when you recognize the mind just gives you one tiny fragment of what's going on in the actual world, then you start to see the reason why perception has to be sharpened, why perception has to be accurate. Because if perception isn't accurate, then we don't get an accurate reading of what's going on in the world. We live in hallucinations, and we just don't function as sane human beings when our perception is not accurate. Actually, if you go back into the ancient Aramaic, and for those who haven't been joining us, or maybe this is your first time on the show, the work that we're doing sources itself out of the ancient Aramaic language. Ancient Aramaic language is the root language of at least 5 of the world's major religions: the Judaic religion, the Christian religion, the Muslim religion, the Baha'i faith, and Zoroastrianism all come out of the Aramaic. There's some suspicion that the Buddha also spoke Aramaic, but nobody knows for sure. So we have at least five of the world's major religions, not because it's a religious language, I would offer, at least in my awareness, it's because it's a physics language. They understood in the physics language Aramaic exactly how the world worked. And so you wouldn't know it from the Greek translations of this idea from the New Testament. And if you would, extract religious significance. We're not talking about religion here. We're not looking to get anybody involved in religion. What we're looking to do is to support people understanding how their minds and how the world works. And I haven't seen anybody. I've read The Great Psychiatrist. I've had training in psychology and psychiatry. And you know what? They don't have it. They don't know it. They don't understand it. However, if you go back into the Aramaic New Testament, you hear a statement being said, the eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? Now, if you look at that, if you ponder that, you go, what the heck does that mean? Where do you go with? The eye is the lamp of the soul. First of all, what's this soul? Then how does the eye become a lamp? I've never seen a light turn on out of an eye except in a science sci-fi movie. How does this become a light? What does it do? And then how does light become dark? If the light for you is darkness, how does darkness become light? It just doesn't make any sense. But if you go to the Aramaic where they're describing the output of the perceptual mind, here's what they were saying, kind of in the long form. You live in a 20 trillion bit world. You're seeing 9 bits of data. That 9 bits of data is meant to be a light, a guide for your journey through the world. If your lights are out, if darkness for you, and in Aramaic, love is light, darkness is any form of hostility or fear. If the light for you, that is the guidance that you follow, is darkness, hostility or fear, then how deep will your darkness become? You know, when we open a new workshop series, the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is always the first one in this series, and Jeannie opens the workshop generally, and she opens it with the question, how many have ever held a newborn child? And the response is, you know, usually from half of the group is, you know, that they've held a newborn. And then she asks, what would you describe the essence of the newborn as? And the response is always some variation on the theme of love. Then a second question, how many have ever done something they regret? And what were you feeling that motivated you to do what you regretted? Now, in 100% of the cultures, in 100% of the places on the planet, the answer is always the same. It's always some variation on the theme of hostility or fear. Rage, grief, pain, trauma. And rage, grief, pain, trauma defile perception. Perception, the output of the 9-bit mind, the tiny fragment of life that you get to see, is defiled by hostility and fear. You got to keep it clean. So when you go back and you hear the directive in the Aramaic that says that the first law is love, God, neighbor, and self, what they were saying was, you've got to keep your lights on when you look at the Creator, when you look at neighbor, when you look at self, and neighbor in that language means anybody that you think about. You got to keep your lights on. If hostility or fear comes up, we get stupid. When our perception is darkened, we don't do our highest and best. We destroy our relationships. We destroy our finances. We destroy our families. We destroy our culture. And here we are with darkened perception destroying the world. Take a look at it. Take a look at the insanity that's going on in our culture and in our world, and darkened perceptions running the game. I talked last week about the Civility Project, where a couple of gentlemen created a statement of civility. And the statement was simply, if I communicate with somebody who does not agree with me, I will treat them in a civil manner. They took that civility statement and asked 535 members of Congress and 50 governors to sign it. Over 2 years, they got three human beings, three people who signed that declaration, that commitment to civility. I would offer that means three out of almost 600 of our so-called leaders don't have human life in them because they're not even willing to commit to civility with each other. They're not willing to commit to keeping their lights on. Why is our culture in such an insane space? Why are our cities, our states, why are we going bankrupt? Why are we so in debt? Because we're guided by minds who are in darkness, whose hostility and fear. Just listen to the political dialogue. Listen to the rage. Listen to the pain in the voices as, of course, they speak about everybody else who's the problem, never realizing that they're the ones with the darkened minds. So what we need to do, folks, I would offer, is we need to start to bring leaders into our civil society, if we want to keep it civil or get it back to civil again, who actually experience perception, clarity from a space of love. Without it, we're crazy, we're insane. And forgiveness is the tool with which you go into your own database, so to speak, and remove that which darkens perception. Now, of course, we live in a culture that says, you made me angry, you made me sad, you made me afraid, my spouse really frightened me, my children really, you know, made me feel abused, et cetera, et cetera. And what we have in that case is we have darkened perception, hallucinating that somebody else is the reason that we're experiencing those things. We're not going to experience those things unless those things are inside of us. And the people who can trigger those things, if you understand forgiveness, are actually your gift and give you the opportunity to change those parts of your mind. So our core work is that of forgiveness. That is, and my thesis I would offer is, that an actual human being functioning fully as a human being would have not even the capability of experiencing hostility and fear. And people say, well, gee, how do you get along in the world if you can't rage at somebody and beat up on them when they don't do the right thing? Hey, I tell you what, I guarantee you, you'll be 1,000 times more effective at producing the results you want out of a mind based in love than you will out of a mind based in hostility or fear. So that's what we're about restoring. David, thanks for the call. We do have another caller coming in, so I'm going to ask Jeannie to put that through, and maybe you'll come back on, David, with any other thoughts on that. Thank you.
All right.
Jeannie, we've got another caller.
Caller at 360, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hey, 360, you're on. What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Lori, and I'm from Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, hi, Lori. How are things out in Washington State?
Rainy and dull, cloudy and rainy.
Ouch. Well, we've got some clouds here in Fort Lauderdale, but it's sunny and about 80, so we're not complaining, especially with what the rest of the world's going through right now, the rest of the culture.
Yeah, exactly.
So how can we support you? What, you have a question or comment for us?
I was wondering about your healing things and how I can move out of my space of, you know, not getting anywhere.
Well, sounds like some pain going on. And so what I would suggest that you do is go to our website, which is www.whyagain.com. Whyagain.com.
Okay.
And on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says download worksheets. I would suggest that you jump in and download the first section there, which is a copy of a new chapter 24 from my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And then as you download that, there's a new seven-step worksheet process. And download that worksheet. And I would suggest you start following those instructions and begin to understand the forgiveness process. You can download my whole book free from the website, or, of course, you can order it as well. And my website, again, is www.whyagain.com. And I promise you, if you pick up that worksheet and start to use it, that if you call me back and you do 5 of those a day for the next 40 days, you'll call me back and that pain that's in your voice will have disappeared. It won't mean you're finished your process, but you'll be excited about what the changes are that are happening in your life.
I'll do that.
Okay. Delighted.
Okay. Thank you.
And let me just say that we regularly see people with so much trauma and so much pain. And because nobody's given us the tool of forgiveness, we haven't been taught that all of those things are removable from our experience. And
right.
While they're coming out of, in the perceptual mind, it really seems like that's an impossibility because it's the only thing that's true is that pain and that trauma. I offer that the pain and the trauma is an hallucination that comes from a mind that's perception is darkened by that hallucination. And it tends to lead us into a space where things seem irresolvable because we don't have access to the higher level of intelligence that is resident in us when we came in. You know, if you think about the newborn child, the newborn child is absolutely the presence of love. And I'd offer that's what we're all designed to be.
Yeah.
And when we get lost in that hostility and fear, and usually it's a generational issue, when we get lost in those generational issues, it seems like nothing else is possible because nothing else is real. I would offer that the only thing that's real is the active presence of love, and forgiveness is a way to achieve going back to your original state and experiencing your life as you were designed to experience it. And it is an absolutely awesome, exciting, amazing journey, and anybody who chooses to put the pen to the paper can make that journey. It's work. I'm not saying it's going to be Dr. Feelgood. In fact, our topic today is going to be on what healing looks like. It's not a Dr. Feelgood process, but it is a reliable, doable process that will take you out of your pain and your trauma should you choose to engage in the use of the tools.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And as you start doing those worksheets, if you have questions, you know we're going to be on the show every day, 1 to 2 o'clock. You're absolutely welcome to call back, and any answers I can give you, any support I can give you, we'll be glad to. That's our purpose for being here.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. And we'll hold you in a blessing in the meantime.
Okay, great. I'll just keep listening.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have several people in chat room, but nobody's asking any questions right now, so I'm going to put in the call number one more time. It's 646-200-4169.
Okay, well, my guidance for today was to do the show centered around the healing process and what it looks like. And one of the reasons why people don't engage the tools of healing and or why the tools have been lost or suppressed is because we haven't understood what the healing process looks like. It is not Dr. Feelgood. When you think of the truth about your body-mind unit, you think about the truth about your physiology, and you don't have a physical body. If we listen to Einstein says this, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So matter doesn't exist. What exists is energy, and you are an energetic being. There are energies that belong in your system. There are energies based in love. There are energies that don't belong in your system. There are energies based in hostility or fear. If there are energies based in hostility or fear within your physiology, then your perception's darkened. You do crazy things. You do things you regret. You do things that you go, oh, my God, how could I have ever said or done that? Well, we could say or do those things because we've been locked into, through our cultural insanity, a mind based in hostility or fear and lost the ability to experience ourselves as the beings that we are, which is love. And there is a reliable, systematic way for removing those energies that are unlike love, those energies of hostility and fear. However, one of the things that happens as you're doing that is you have to go back through the release of those energies. And it's not necessarily fun. It's exciting once you understand it and you begin to engage in it. It's absolutely awesome. But it doesn't feel good. So when we bring some form of hostility or fear into our structure, I'd offer the mind functions through every cell in the body. And when we bring an energy based in hostility or fear into our structures, we put into that structure an energy that is disintegrative. The mind functions through every cell in the body. And so when we store those informations in the cell says, ouch, that hurts. However, we live in a culture that says, if your cells are saying, ouch, that hurts, have we got a pill for you? We can anesthetize you against your hurt. Now, of course, if you self-medicate, that's very disapproved in this culture. You do pot, you do cocaine, you do alcohol, man, you are disapproved of. You eat too much food and use it as a drug, you'll become obese, you will be disapproved of. However, if you happen to have somebody in a white coat who writes a little piece of paper and a script that says, here, take this, then that's approved. Actually, I just had a conversation with someone yesterday who was telling me about a minister who basically destroyed the church that they were the head of, and the whole congregation finally withdrew. And this person had had an injury and was on pain medication, and they became strung out on pain medication, and they just ran their church right into the ground. But it was approved of. You know, it's an okay thing. It's not okay. We need to deal with our lives. We don't need to be taking pills so we can pretend we don't have to deal with our lives, because taking a pill doesn't take away the pain. It doesn't take away the trauma. It doesn't take away the dynamic in our lives. It just allows us to anesthetize ourselves against it. And anesthetizing, as a temporary measure, if you're doing your work, gee, I'm in pain, I know I've got work to do, here's my work, I'm doing it. Well, you know, then take a pain pill and get rid of the pain and continue to do your work. But if you become addicted to those things and use them as a suppressant, you're lowering your vitality. And as you lower your vitality, the tendency is to get lost in the trauma and the pain, and the drug that's used to suppress it becomes the anesthetic that people come to rely on. We suggest that instead of relying on drugs to anesthetize yourself, you rely upon forgiveness and your relationship to your true nature, which is love. So every energy, if you've lived in the drug-oriented culture, and you can hardly go into a grocery store, so-called grocery store, where you can buy foods that aren't laced with drugs. They're almost all laced with drugs today. Sugar, caffeine, nicotine, all kinds of chemicals and fractionated foods lower the vitality of the system and act as a drug. So when you start to revitalize yourself, when you start to say, okay, I'm taking responsibility, I'm going to change my life, I'm going to look at what's inside of me, guess what happens? You get to look at it. It's not fun, because what you've been suppressing, what you've been hiding from yourself is painful. And one of the interesting things about the perceptual mind, you know, David started out with that question about the perceptual mind, is that whatever's firing in the perceptual mind looks like the end-all, the be-all, and that's all that will ever exist in our lives. It traps us into thinking that. And it's not true. All it is a frequency coming from brain cells, a frequency coming from the mind. And so when we begin to delete those frequencies of pain and trauma, all of a sudden you find yourself living without pain and trauma. Same circumstance, same situation. You know, somebody in your life is being nasty and you go into, oh, such pain. When you delete the pain, somebody's nasty and you look at them and you go, you maintain your beingness, which is love, and you go, gee, it looks like you're in pain. Can I support you? Can I assist you? As opposed to, oh, you've caused so much pain in me. When you start to forgive, when you start to remove that pain, it starts to disappear. And symptomatically, on the way out, it looks exactly what it looked like on the way in. Jeannie tells us we've got another caller. We're going to tap into our caller, and then we'll continue with this discussion about exactly what healing looks like, why it's not popular, and how to overcome what looks like a problem when you're in the healing process. So we've got a caller, Jeannie?
Yes. And for some reason, the system is not letting me turn on their speaker. There we go. 815, you are on the air.
Hi, this is Tim Hayes.
Well, hello,
oh, hi, Tim Hayes. How are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well. I just had to pipe in and let you remind yourself or the group about Dr. Gerald Jampolsky. He's the author of Forgiveness and Love is Letting Go of Fear. He's a psychiatrist,
right.
And he wrote, if I were allowed to rewrite the American Psychiatric Association's manual diagnoses, it would be only one page, and it would read, insanity is when we are not experiencing ourselves as love and giving that love away.
There you go. Hooray, Gerald. He's right on track.
And there are so many other validations for the work you're doing from the ancient texts. One I sent you not too long ago was the material from Buddha's brain, where it talks about exactly what you're talking about, how we create our own realities, and literally the blind spots in our eyes don't show up as holes out there in reality because our minds fill it in, and they
fill
do
in
it
the blanks
all the time.
Yep.
So yep. I just wanted to add those validations to what you were saying, and thank you for having the show, and I'll be on as often as I can.
Cool. Well, Tim, let us introduce you. Tim Hayes is a psychologist up in Chicago, actually Crystal Lake, right?
Yes.
Tim? Crystal Lake. And he has a private practice there. And for the last 5 years, you've been running a Mindshifter support group. And so
that's
anybody
right.
in the Chicagoland area that wants to tap in, if you go to our website, you can see the contact information when the group meets. And tell us a little bit about your experience in the Mindshifter support group. And one of the reasons for this show is to create support for support group leaders and inspire others to start support groups. When you first started leading this group, how much did you know about this work?
Well, I had the four-hour audio tapes of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and I probably listened to them about 20 times. And then I stumbled across this group by trying to share it with other people, and I ran across a school for intuitive arts and sciences that was already running a support group with David Hayes, who you had on earlier.
Right.
And so I got in only knowing that one lecture. And now for the past 5 years, we've been using, I believe we've had, until last year, we had 10 of your lectures, and now we've got 12 or 13. And we watch them in rotation, so now I've seen them all 5 or 6 times each. And the support group is so valuable because it allows me to do, on a much broader scale, what I do in my individual sessions with people. And the testimonials that people bring in about how it's changing their lives, improving their relationships, improving their inner emotional state, and helping them with physical problems is what makes it worth me donating my time to do this for the past 5 years. It's just phenomenal.
It is awesome, isn't it, when people really get the tools. And it takes, you know, there's an African proverb I love to use. It says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And the reason I asked how much you've done of this work is people don't have to be experts at this work to pick up and start up a support group. It takes a community of support to understand and to create support. And, you know, when I'm at Tim's group, if my stuff is up, if I'm in my hostility and fear, Tim can be the light that shines on my mind to bring me healing, and vice versa, if his is up, I can be the light. And when we do that for each other, it just creates an awesome dynamic in the world that that we are working to take to critical mass, to replace the dynamics of hostility and fear that are running the game right now.
Yeah, and for the first 3 years, we probably had an average of 3 to 5 people at each meeting, and occasionally we'd have a few more. But after the third year, it started to pick up to the point where now we're averaging 8 to 13 per meeting. So
awesome.
It just takes time. It takes the fact that people know they can come here for support and for effective tools to help improve their life, and then the word starts to get out, and it takes its own course.
Yes, yes. So anybody that's listening, if you're ready to start a support group, tell us one of the biggest miracles that you've seen in the support group, Kim.
Well, one of my favorites was a woman who had a whole series of horrible things happen with her daughter, 20-some-year-old daughter, had a baby, and all of a sudden they were being accused of having done something bad to the baby, and the Department of Children and Family Services got involved and kept everybody away from the child, and the infant was like 2 months old, and all of a sudden it separated from its mother and it couldn't breastfeed, and the grandmother was a regular member of our group, and her testimonial about how she was able to handle that upset and still send energies of love to the people who were causing all of this disruption and the people at the Children and Family Services who were not getting the information straight, and how quickly it helped resolve things when she didn't go to anger. That's one of the biggest miracles I've seen.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate the work you're doing, and we just hold you in a blessing, and we'd love to hear from you often on the show and what's happening with the support group.
Well, I will listen as often as possible, and blessings on you as well.
All right, we love you. Take care.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.
Okay. We have some comments going on in the chat room. Since you're talking about healing crisis and everything, go and you were talking about drugs that people use. Address also that, like, two things that popped into my mind was busyness and anger, and that those are drugs to keep people also from looking at what's coming up for them during their crisis, or really any time. But.
Well, a number of drugs, you just triggered the brain cells for me, sweetie, of, you know, a number of drugs that the culture uses. It's amazing as we travel, we go into homes, and, you know, people will house us oftentimes as we travel. And we go into places where the television runs 18 hours a day. And when the television isn't on, the radio's on. Something's blaring all the time. And that inability to be with what's going on inside of us, just to be in a quiet place, a place inside, we'll have people who will start to do this work, and they talk about how they hate themselves and how they can't stand to be alone. So they always have something going on to distract them. And then once they start doing the work and deleting the pain that's inside, they get to the point where, man, I don't want that noise. I love my quiet time. I love to be inside and just in that quiet space where previously they couldn't visit in there because it was too painful. So it's amazing how we can anesthetize or distract ourselves. Another one is if somebody has stuff going on inside that they don't want to or don't know how to deal with, oftentimes what they'll do is they will just become so busy. They'll run off, you know, like their eyes will open first thing in the morning and off they go. One of the things I suggest to everyone is when you open your eyes in the morning, start to breathe a gentle, connected breath and give yourself a few minutes to just be in that quiet space. You know, one of the things that we actually just went to a meeting here last week in Fort Lauderdale of a group that calls itself a near-death group, where people have had near-death experiences. And as usual, the culture's got it backward, and a near-death experience is not near-death. It's actually a near-life experience. When one is caught up in the body-mind unit's hostility and fears, they tend to be lost in something other than the experience of who they are as beings of love. And so the culture promotes that. And in terms of spiritual existence, that's a state of death. And the average person, in my experience in this culture, is dead by the age of 4. They're lost in the content of their minds and can't tell the difference between themselves, the content of their minds, and what's going on in the outside world. They can't tell the difference. And so that near-death experience is a place, it's actually near life. What happens is the body-mind unit is clinically killed. It dies. So what happens is the body's mind, or what we call the body's mind, shuts up. It's quiet. There's no noise from it. And all of a sudden, many people, for the first time in memory, have a direct experience of who they are as love. And if their bodies are restarted and they come back from that clinical death, having been out of their minds for a time period, they bring back their direct experience of love, and all of a sudden a whole different world opens up for them. Their lives change, and they experience and understand everything from a totally different place. If one engages in the process of forgiveness, and engaging in the process of forgiveness, you get to collapse the output of the body's mind, or so-called body's mind, and you get to be out of your mind. If you can be out of your mind for just a few seconds, you get to experience a human life. One of my tongue-in-cheek lines in the workshop oftentimes is, in order to really, truly heal, you've got to be out of your mind. And that's what happens in the near-life experience where the body clinically dies. So the letting loose of that carbon-based memory system, that multi-generational database, and shutting it up is an important thing to do. And taking the first few minutes in the morning, rather than jumping out of bed, I got to go, stop, breathe, be with yourself. That's where you can come in easily into a direct experience of a human life. And then when you carry that into your day, it just changes every energy, every frequency of everything. And then the other drug that that Jeannie mentioned is anger, the most common drug on planet Earth. The most anesthetizing drug is hostility. I suggest that people who are hostility addicts actually enter into a 12-step program and do a 12-step type of program around hostility. to get free of that drug. And what happens, because it's the drug is free and the supplier's internal, you can't just say, okay, I'm not going to the liquor store anymore, because the supplier's internal, most people never get free of that drug. And so it takes a really concerted effort and commitment to drop the use of hostility. And what we find in our intensives, we do intensive experiences where the idea of the workshop is to dig in and support people in touching into deeper parts of what's going on inside of them and cleaning those parts out. And every time in the last 40 years, I've been able to stir somebody to hostility and in an intensive, and then, a moment later, get them to drop their hostility, all of a sudden comes the pain and the trauma. What is the loss? What is the grief? What is the hurt that lies underneath the hostility? It's always there. And so if you're in relationship with an hostility addict, or you are an hostility addict, have some compassion for them and for them, for yourself. These are drugs. Okay, you talk. I'm still on here, it shows. So you're not hearing me? Okay, I'm going to
keep talking. Michael's going to hang up and call back in. I'm not sure that anybody can hear me.
Okay, I hope we're back on. We lost connection there for a moment. Pardon us, our technical difficulties, but if our calculations are correct, we should be back on. Jeannie, can you hear me?
You're back on, yes.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So we were talking about hostility as a drug, and underlying hostility is always pain, like the use of every other drug. People don't become addicted to anything unless they have pain that seems to be unresolvable. All pain is resolvable through forgiveness. Anesthetizing yourself does not put an end to the pain. What it does is it locks the pain into tissue where it creates degenerative diseases. And so the idea of this work, rather than locking ourselves or getting lost in degenerative disease, is to own, be in touch with our pain. It's not Dr. Feelgood to do that, but that's how the healing process works. If you can't feel it, you can't heal it. If you're not willing to be with it, you can't work through it. And so healing symptoms occur on three levels, physical, mental, and emotional. On a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. On a mental level, healing looks like any kind of negative thought you've ever had and confusion. On an emotional level, healing looks like any kind of negative feeling you've ever had and depression. So it's not a Dr. Feelgood process. The energies that have been locked into the structure have to come back up out of the structure. The only difference symptomatically between the two is the direction the energy's moving. If you're not safe to be with somebody's hostility, rage, fear, grief, and pain, then step back. And, you know, oftentimes in intensives we'll see somebody who, I'm not ready to deal with my pain. And so when somebody else goes into their pain, they go over and they have to pat them on the back and say, oh, it's okay, you can stop now, because what you're doing is resonating something I haven't dealt with. Once you've dealt with your own pain and trauma, it's delightful to be with somebody who's in their pain. Because what happens is, as you become the space of love for someone who's experiencing their pain, who has the willingness to work through it, your pain starts to melt. It starts to disappear. I mean, I could give you story after story, thousands of stories of people in horrendous trauma, and they hesitate to go in there. And in intensive, I'll say, yeah, go ahead, go right in, go all the way in, feel that 100%. Now, let's work with it. And they come out the other side, and all of a sudden, this horrid, traumatic thing is done in their lives. They're finished with it. That's called healing. Not Dr. Feelgood, not fun. So again, on a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. Let me give you an example of that. We had a woman at Heartland back, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and this woman was from a Mormon multiple family where they had several wives, and you know, each wife had 12, 13, 14 children. And this woman was in an intensive, and she worked through a major trauma, which was the death of her son in an accident. And her son actually came and visited her. But that's not the core of the story. A few hours later, after she'd worked through that, all of a sudden she had this just god-awful, horrendous, excruciating pain in her stomach. Take me to the hospital. Take me to the hospital. I'm dying. I said, well, wait a minute. Hold on. Take a breath. Just get settled, get centered, and breathe for a moment. When have you experienced this kind of pain in your stomach before? Oh, never, never. Just get me to the hospital. I'm dying. Well, take a breath. Let's just take a minute here and take a look. Think back. Let yourself be in touch with this. When have you felt this pain before? And all of a sudden she stops and she goes, oh, I remember. I was about 7 years of age. Now, this woman's from a multiple family, and she had a sister who was about 20 years older than she was. When she was seven, she was going out with the family to this sister's home for dinner. She idolized. She just adored her older sister. Didn't have much connection with her because she was from, you know, a totally different family. However, on this particular occasion, when they went to dinner, her sister prepared the dinner, and her sister wasn't a very good cook. She poisoned the whole family. And this little seven-year-old child was the first one to be struck by the food poisoning. And she sat at the table in excruciating pain, not wanting to offend the sister that she loved so much. The instant that she got in touch with and remembered that experience, this excruciating stomach pain disappeared. She was free of it. Now, I would offer that excruciating pain, and this one was in her 70s. I think if I remember correctly, at that point, she was 73 years of age. At 73 years of age, having carried that from the age of 7, I guarantee there was some pretty heavy degeneration going on in her stomach. And when she was able to deal with that pain and allow it to resurface and re-experience it and bring the active presence of love to it, I mean literally, totally, completely. I'm talking from one 10-second period to the next 10-second period, she has zero physical pain where moments before she thought she was dying and needed to be in the hospital. That's what healing looks like on a physical level. On an emotional level, healing looks like any kind of negative thought, and you'll find people who maybe put some form of negative thinking away decades ago, and all of a sudden, here it is in their face. It's back. Oh, I thought I was finished with that. Here I am back in that old issue, and here I haven't gotten anywhere, and blah, blah, blah. And I can't think a straight thought. I'm so confused. What's going on? I can give you an example from my own life on that one. And this was part of how I figured out back about 30 years ago how the healing process worked. I used to have a practice in South Florida, and I would teach in several different locations around South Florida. And I was doing a workshop in Miami for a group of about 200 people. And it was a weekend workshop, really high energy, really flowing. And we'll get into what that means, the high energy part of it, in a few minutes. But the energy was really moving. And I left the workshop, went back to my hotel. The place that was sponsoring me had gotten me a hotel for the weekend. I left and went back to the hotel, and I all of a sudden, both ends of my body open up. I mean, I'm just in a major healing crisis, major release, and as I'm going through that release, it's pretty heavy duty. I get through and out the other side of it, and the next morning, I'm driving back from Miami to Fort Lauderdale. Now, you know, I'm a relatively bright guy. I've lived in the same house for 5 years in Fort Lauderdale. It's three turns off the interstate. Now, 30 years later, and I haven't been to that house in years, I know exactly how to get there. But here I was in the middle of a healing crisis, and I'm driving up I-95, and I can't remember which exit to get off the interstate at. My physiology is so toxic from the toxic release of what I had processed in that weekend workshop, And what happens is once you let go of some of those toxins, it dumps into the bloodstream. When it hits the blood-brain barrier, boom, brain checks out. I couldn't remember how to get home. It was three turns off the interstate in a place I'd lived for 5 years. That's what healing looks like on a mental level. That kind of confusion happens. People get scared and go running off to get a pill for that. And no, you don't need to run off and get a pill. It's all part of the healing process. Then on the emotional level, healing looks like any kind of negative emotion and depression. So oftentimes people who start doing their work, they've successfully in the past suppressed their rage, their fear, their grief, their pain. And when they start to open that up in mass, when huge old energies open up, all of a sudden that what's going on in the 9-bit mind is all the things that happened over the last, 30 years that I've got to be pained about, and one gets lost in that depression, in that heavy-duty state. And that's where you want to be really cognizant and use the tools, because all that's happening is that content that's in the process of leaving is firing in brain cells, and as it's firing in brain cells, it's being exposed to the active presence of love, because you're in your work, you're doing your work, and you're processing through that. Your body is releasing and letting go. And the major thing that you want to make sure that you're engaged in when you go through a situation like that is that you want to be in willingness. Willingness is what I call cosmic grease. It's the stuff that accelerates the movement of the drama and trauma that you're now undoing and getting loose of it. Now, let's take it to still another level, because there's a whole other level to it. Ultimately, as you begin to become skilled at dealing with your own internal dynamics and decoding what's going on in there, you'll start literally moving through things that never happened to you, but happened in your bloodline, that happened in your genetics. Literally, the body-mind unit is a device that stores every frequency that comes to it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so as you begin the healing process, you start to open your genetics, and you start to let go of dynamics and patterns that have been established through the generations. And it's absolutely awesome how that happens. I give you another example from my own life. Just let me check. Jeannie, have we got another caller by any chance?
We did, but they've hung up, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, then let me just go into this one situation that I can, again, from experience speak about. And that is that I've always had pretty good control of my temper. Somebody had to get pretty crazy to get me to lose it. And except for one situation, that was when I was driving. And I could be behind the wheel of the car and be in a fist-shaking rage in a fraction of a second. I mean, it was just – and it was an issue that I had worked on, a period of maybe 5-6 years, really consciously, purposely worked on that issue. But just, I would think I was through it, and then I'd be driving down the highway and somebody cut me off, and bang, there it would be again. I just seemed to have no control over it. And every time there's something we have no control over, it's something in the dissociated mind. It's something that needs to be undone, and you undo it through forgiveness. So this particular day I'm doing some forgiveness work around this issue of driving and rage, and I get this intuitive hit. I get the message. And one of the skills you have to build in doing this work is you have to be able to decode the contents of your own mind. You have to be able to listen in a way that our culture teaches us not to listen, and to be able to understand the signals that come. Literally, the physiologists will tell us that there are biochemical signals. Well, each of those biochemical signals contains information. And if you're paying attention on the inside, you'll be in touch with that information. Well, on this particular occasion, I got the intuitive understanding that this rage while driving came from and was inherited from my great-great-grandfather. Now, of course, there were no cars in the day of my great-great-grandfather, and I never knew my grandfather, let alone my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather. So how could I possibly get this? But I'd offer that because this body-mind unit registers every frequency that comes to it holographically in every cell, including the sperm and the egg. All of these things are passed along from generation to generation. So I went through some forgiveness work around that issue, and then I had a conversation with my great-great-grandfather and put forward the thought, I understand that this is an inherited anger from you, and, if you want it back, it's yours. You're welcome to take it. Otherwise, let's just release it and let it go. Now, that was almost 30 years ago. My son is now 31, and actually while I was doing this process, he was on my hip. He was hanging out with me. And I haven't had a fist-shaking incident behind the wheel of a car in 30 years. And up to 5 years before that, I had no control over it, zero. And, you know, David had asked at the opening of the show, and we got off on one part of his question, but really didn't get into the other, and that is the idea of the dissociated mind. And when there's something that we're in denial about, something we don't want to deal with, something we don't want to feel, you know, how many have ever had parents say, oh, you're just like your grandmother, you're just like your grandfather, and use that in a way to shut us down, to stop us from that behavior that the parent didn't want to deal with. And usually it was the parent who was being just like the grandfather and the grandmother, and we were simply playing off of those patterns. And when we become, instead of denying those patterns, instead of going, oh, well, I don't ever want to feel or deal with that or be aware of that, which is what we've been taught, and when we say I don't want to be aware of that, we shut down the faculty with which we can be aware of those subtle dynamics within ourselves and the source of things within ourselves. So it takes some practice to open those things up and to become cognizant of the messages that go on within us and to be able to undo those messages and to change them. And so it's all part of this healing process that's so awesome and so magnificent when you begin to engage it. And again, you can go to my website, www.whyhean.com, accolades to Jeannie. She is the webmaster and has created an awesome site with so much on it. There are videos, there are audios, there are articles, there's just all kinds of material. You can spend weeks and not find every corner of the site, but download the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can download it free. And or, if you'd like, you can, of course, order our products. We've got 15 different two-hour DVDs that are all live recordings of our different workshops. You can go on our website. There's an order products link if you want to get some of the DVDs. You know, Dr. Tim was talking a few minutes ago about having listened to the four-hour audio track of Why Is This Happening to Me Again before he started doing the support group in Chicago. When David Hayes, who's now the manager at Heartland, came and did, he actually started out. He had been given that same set of CDs by somebody. We invite people to copy and share them. And, of course, we invite people to invite to donate to support us because, you know, most stuff, it's copyrighted. You know, they have that little warning, the FBI is going to come and get you. Well, our warning is please take it, share it, put it out to somebody else, invite them to support us. Or if they've got the money to do it, buy it themselves. But that's part of how we travel and do our workshops free. But David had one of those sets of tapes for a period of 2 or 3 years. Didn't know there was any more work to it, and he made up his own worksheet out of listening to the CDs. Pardon me, it was cassette tapes back then. Listening to the cassette tapes and started to do worksheets. And one day noticed there was a phone number on it. Called the phone number, I answered the phone, and if I remember correctly, it was a Monday or a Tuesday. And David was in Chicago, and of course Heartland is in the Ozarks in southern Missouri. So, well, David, you know, we're starting an intensive Friday. Why don't you come? And David moved some mountains and came and did the intensive, and then the next year he came back, he continued to do that work, started the support group in Chicago, actually set up a series of workshops, and I went up and spoke in Chicago as a result of David having done that intensive. And then the next year he came down and he was going to do a year. We had a one-year support team program at that point where people could come and live and work at Heartland for a year and use the tools and become cognizant of the tools and how to use them. And I think David was there about maybe 10 days or 2 weeks, and he came up and he said, you know, Michael, I'm not leaving. And that was, I guess it's going on 4 years ago now. So David is now a permanent member of Heartland, and we appreciate him being there. And he's created a thing called the Building the Brain Cells game, which is a way to support people continuing to work with the tools on an ongoing basis. And it is that support that really opens an awesome space for people to move forward. So I'm going to take
Michael,
a breath in my conversation. Jeannie, do you have anything for us?
Well, two things. One, David's back on the phone and he wants to speak, so I'm going to put him on here in just a second. But there's a conversation going on in the chat room after you mentioned the meeting with the past life or the near life experiences and everything.
Right.
Wondering whether they actually did a past life or whether it was, you know, like something through the DNA, like the experiences are actually experiences from the DNA of the ancestors and different things like that. So I don't know if you can
sure.
add
well, before
more
we jump in with
that.
David. Yeah,
and
before
we're down
we jump
four
in with David.
Minutes, so.
Okay. So let me just throw out a couple of thoughts. You can go to, I believe it's neardeath.com. And, you know, I think there are many explanations. People experience things. There were several different people at that meeting that spoke about their near-life experience. And to me, the most important component is people experience being love, being embraced in love, and experience a human life. That's almost invariably the near-life experience, and that's the component that's important. As people have that experience, they tend to go all through all sorts of things. Some of them become past lives. Some of them are, I remembered something from my ancestral life. Many of them, there's an interesting video. You can order it on eBay called Saved by the Light. Awesome video. That is a true story of a fellow named Daniel Brinkley who was struck by lightning. And part of his near-life experience was that he had to go back. He was an assassin that worked for the government. And he had to go back and re-experience each of the kills that he had done from the perspective of the pain of the person who experienced it. I offer that's because when we do an offense, we create an energy in our field, which sooner or later we have to account for and deal with. It's not that the creator's sitting up there keeping records and going to get you if you make a mistake. That's an energy that's stored in your own field. And sooner or later, you're going to play it out, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Sooner or later, you're going to play it out, or you're going to be able to recapture that from your own field and forgive it, remove it, and be finished with it. So there are many different explanations of the past life or the near-life type of experience. And in the last analysis, to me, the thing that's important is you get to experience being out of your mind. You know, forgiveness gives you a momentary experience of being out of your mind. Take those first few moments in the morning, get that the blessing of the input that comes from being out of your mind. David, come on. Let's say hello.
Hello.
You're on
there.
You're on
hey,
the
David.
Air.
Okay. Actually, it was Terry that had a question. He said he'd like to, he'll save it for another time since it looks like the show was about to wrap up. And thank you very much for all of the feedback and the insights that you've added to building my brain cells today.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right, David. We love you. Thanks. Appreciate you both.
And we do want to add real quickly then, we're less than 2 minutes, starting at 2 o'clock directly as soon as we're finished is the fifth dimensional living, and that's with Diane and Carol, and Carol's the one that actually got us started on doing this radio show, so we want to thank them for their input in getting us going. And then, Michael, you want to mention real quick that some of the workshops that we're doing here.
Yeah, we're resident in South Florida right now, and tonight we're going to do the workshop Empowered to Heal here in Fort Lauderdale. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, we're going to be doing a series of workshops. You can jump onto our website and come and join us. We're down just off of Las Olas Boulevard, down toward the beach. It's a free open series of workshops. We'd be delighted if you'd be here. We're also going to be next Sunday at a place called BRT Recovery Services. Our friends at intherooms.com, which is an awesome, awesome community of people in recovery. Really sweet community, very welcome. Intherooms.com, you might want to check them out. They're going to be sponsoring Why Is This Happening to Me Again next Sunday in Pompano at BRT. And, of course, it's an open session. It's not just for people in recovery. We're going to be at a place called the TAO Center, a Jewish Renewal Center in Fort Lauderdale on the 18th. And on the 23rd, we're looking at scheduling something. The Unity Church in Pompano Beach has just reopened, and so we're hopefully going to set something up with them. So we've got lots going on. And, of course, you can go to our website and look at our intensive schedule starting on July the 8th. This summer we'll start a 65-day intensive at Heartland Residential Center. We do awesome gourmet vegetarian fresh and raw food, and a whole lot of healing goes on. So please join us for any and all of that. Check out the website. All those scheduled things are on the site. Please tell your friends to join us in the chat room. Call in to the number. Jeannie, maybe you want to give the number once again just to give people the reminder, and then they'll have it available for tomorrow.
646-200-4169, and thank you for joining us on Mind Shifter Radio.
Have the best year yet of your eternal life. That's what we're here for.
the best year yet of our eternal lives. Take care.